Before you indulge in the show, a quick word about those in the control room. In No Particular Order with Vicky Neve, the podcast is produced by the nice people at Loading Zone. So if you need a podcast for your brand, personality, or even special event, choose loadingzone.co.uk. And now, place your seats in the upright position for the main event, in No Particular Order, live-ish from Inpo HQ.
This program is for mature audiences only.
Please have your fake ID ready.
Welcome back for part two, and with Vicky at Inpo HQ, helping women to be bolder, braver, freer, it's Jess Rogers, the life coach. Plus, joining Jess, author of Life, Lemons and Melons, an at Copperfield People trustee and companion trekker to Vicky in the Himalayas, as you're about to find out, the amazing Alice May Perkis. In part one, Vicky asked what this life coaching thing was all about. Alice talked about fighting cancer and revealed a little-known eyebrows fact. And if you missed it, listen back to episode 3. And this time we start with Alice, who's just revealed the benefits of cold water swimming and the fact she takes a dip all year round. Welcome back to the second part, episode 4, in no particular order.
Alice blows my mind, and one day I will be brave enough.
Yes!
But she swims outdoors.
Where do you go?
So I swim at Brockwell Lido.
Okay, yeah.
In Herne Hill, and then there's a lake in Beckenham Place Park that I swim in as well.
Do you not worry about the fishes and the things touching you?
It's a bit cold.
It's a bit cold.
Yeah. Last time I went to the lake, it was 3 degrees.
I need to sing. I mean, I want to sing again now.
And what does it give you?
It gives me so much. So it's been a huge part of like bringing me back to my body after being sick. As well, especially because I basically had 10 surgeries over 3 years, which was a snore. I kind of felt really disconnected from my body. So there's something amazing about getting in cold water and feeling my kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
The dolphins, the endorphins. What?
No, feeling my acclimatized, like getting more acclimatized to the cold water is amazing, and feeling like my body's strength as the water gets colder and I don't find it harder to get in. There's something amazing about that. It's really good for your mental health, apparently, as well, because cold water like shocks your system into rebooting. So that's supposed to be really good.
Talk about not wanting to go, and how sometimes it can be, oh, I really don't want to do this, and then you go and you see it in your face. You see, I mean, when you come out, Alice, you tend to put a picture up of when she's out of the water, and it's vibrant, you can see.
Lifts you up.
Somebody took a picture of me actually, like literally just after I got out of the water, and it was, I think that day it was quite warm, she says, so I think it was like 6 or 7 degrees that day.
Ooh,
which is
lovely.
It's quite
tropical,
balmy.
I mean, this isn't in a wetsuit, this is in a cozy
swimmers. I do wear gloves.
Treat yourself.
And if I'm in the lake, I wear boots as well, because home and my feet smell like goose poo.
I was going to suggest we do this.
It's like the feeling afterwards, invigorating.
It is.
Then poo and cup.
I'm going to set up a sad swimmers club. So anyone can like just be like a meeting every now and again for people who want to come and swim and like
have a bit of
community.
I want to. Somebody actually, I think her name was Ellie. Somebody offered...
Ella Foote. Ella Chloe Swims.
Yes.
I love her.
And she, for January, when I was doing something different, and she was like, come and swim with me in January.
Yeah.
And I just messaged her back, will I die?
No.
I feel like I would.
Hampstead, aren't there? There's a ladies' pool or something.
Hampstead is a ladies' pond.
Yeah, and I know a few people who go and swim there regularly in the morning, and it's community.
It's beautiful.
And it's,
I fancy it probably April, May.
August.
April's a good time, actually, because it starts getting warmer. So come to London in April, I take swimming.
Okay.
I'm taking Candice as well. And maybe G.
Oh, yeah.
There's loads of people who are on the trek who are like, can I come swimming with you? I'm like, for sure. Make it tea mountain.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
I really and it's supposed to be really good for your lymphatic system as well. And the type of breast cancer I had was one that's likely to recur. And so cold water swimming being good for your lymphatic system apparently is one of the things that can potentially reduce your risk of recurrence. So
okay. With that, when you wrote your post after the trek, really hit me. I really struggled with anyone talking about it afterwards, straight after, and I couldn't really sort of digest it, and probably until mid-December. And you wrote, being the most real version of yourself, there's nowhere to hide on the mountainside. And I just thought, oh, it's exactly how it felt.
Yeah.
When, for anyone that doesn't know, I'll just say it again, you know, we did trek in the Himalayas. But for me, all of you that had been through cancer and some still going through treatment, you wrote, ever since treatment, I've been scared. Scared my body is letting me down again and figuring out what it can and can't do. And to do what you did on that trek must have just lifted you up. But then I did worry about everyone when we came home, because I sank.
The crash, yeah.
Huge crash. Mm. And yet I haven't had cancer. Mm. So for me, it was the journey of doing the up and the down and pushing myself mentally more than physically. But for everyone else, I kept thinking about you all. And it was funny because we were talking about earlier how I felt terrible because I got so down when we came back. There was this huge moment. It was so amazing. Then I came down and I just hugely crashed. I haven't had cancer. And I kept going, God, Vicky, you haven't had cancer. You're not allowed to feel like this.
You absolutely are.
And like, stopped
you
that.
Did not have an easy time. Your disgusting feet, like...
But you also went on your... You had your own experience, didn't
right,
you?
Yes.
You know, there are things that you were working yeah. through yourself. And so yeah. doing having that experience meant that you were able to face specific yeah. things for yourself as well. So
I think it's a really interesting thing to do for anyone. Because before we went, I kept thinking, physically, I'm not ready for this, you know, going on long walks. It's not particularly hilly around here. And it was so uphill, those mountains.
Funnily enough.
It was, I mean, it's more uphill than I envisaged in. I just thought, like, gentle.
Undulating hills.
Yeah,
yeah, there was no bloody undulating hills.
We were trekking. I mean, didn't the word trekking, yeah. Himalayas, yeah. maybe get you
up,
thinking?
I didn't look up trek, and that's what John, the leader, kept saying to me. Because I was like, this isn't trekking, this is climbing. And he was like, no, trekking. And he was like reciting it. And then I looked it up when I got home because I thought he was lying.
Day three was climbing.
Oh, day three. Day three was the special day because the three out of the four groups managed to be at the top at the same time. And that's when I was sobbing like a baby with yeah. a completely screwed up face. And then I turn around and who is before me? But Alice, who I just was...
But like the whole time we were away, I only saw you for like flashes. And nearly always like one of us was crying. Like every time we saw each other.
Every time, just holding one of us was crying.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, but crazy time. But it must have been for you to get your body to... Because there were people, somebody that I was trekking with this time last year, when she was trekking, the same time last year, she could barely get up the stairs because of her treatment. And we're climbing the Himalayas. These people were so incredible. And the power, I was saying to James earlier that if I tried to do one of those days right now, if I just got all my gear on and thought, right, I'm going to go and do one of those days, I would fail. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm not physically fit enough. I wasn't then. But somehow, you just keep going. This one foot just keeps going in front of the other. And it's incredible to have felt that power.
There's nothing
power.
Like it. I've just written a piece about it, actually, for Psychologies, which it'll be out in the summer. But I wrote about the power of expressed friendships and how when you're in this kind of situation that's quite extreme, like you're just kind of forced to be really real with everyone really yeah. quickly. Mm. Like Hope, one of the girls on my team who was also in my tent, it got to the last day and I suddenly looked at her and I was like, I literally have no idea what you do for a living. because it just hadn't seemed important.
Yeah. No. But you probably, you know,
but we talked about everything
and pooed on a mountainside,
right?
With
her, but also, you kind of got below that surface level, because what you do for a living is a surface. That question, what do you do?
Yeah.
Whereas it wasn't about, it's about who you actually
absolutely
are, and that's where
absolutely
you got to quite quickly. It sounds like,
yeah, because even before we started trekking, it was like a ridiculous experience in itself, wasn't it? Amazing.
You got to base camp, the camp, and everyone was like, because it was a real test to get there. It's exhausting, and we were all in our tent going, well, you know, the trek's going to be easy compared to that. Gosh, you know, because we were in pieces. And then we got to this camp, and it was like this I didn't expect this explosion of colour. All the tents were just different colours, and it was, I just was like, this is the most magical place. It's a tent, Vic, what are you going on about? I had had a really strange journey all the way there. For some reason, I wasn't put with people that I knew from my WhatsApp group. So when I was on the plane, I wasn't near anyone that I'd been messaging with. And then we stayed in this hotel and I wasn't with people. And I just kept feeling really disconnected. And I got there and then I was in a tent with people that I wasn't trekking with. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking, I've never felt so alone. Mm. And I sat on the toilet and I sobbed my heart out, and then a massive spider just ran over my head. Trevor, he was so big. And I remember, if that happened at home, I would have screamed and lost my shit. And I literally looked up and thought, oh, of course there's a fucking great big spider above my head. And I just couldn't cope, and I was really struggling. And then the first day we were walking along, and the most amazing girl called Clara, and she was talking to me, and then I realized I was crying, and she was like, what's the matter? And I was like, I'm really lonely. And she was like, we've got a spare bed, just come in our tent. And in their tent, the beds were beds. It wasn't a mattress on the floor.
You were some of the chosen ones. I'm a bloody trustee for the charity. I didn't get a sod in bed, did I? It's fine. I was very happy in my tent.
And then from that moment on, you become family. It's a trekking family.
It's the weirdest thing.
And I'm absolutely devastated because next weekend they're all meeting up and they've got like a cottage, but it's really hard because the juggling with all the sports and the kids and just actually time away, you know. I was really lucky that it's 9 days, mm-hmm. you know, to do that trek. And, you know, lots of people took over and did stuff, but it's a long time and I couldn't go. But now I literally said to them, I can't even look at WhatsApp. I'm not going to be looking at Instagram. I'm not sure I can handle you all being together and not being there. But it's so lovely because everyone's still in contact. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. I was in a restaurant in Brixton a few weeks ago, just minding my own business, having dinner with some friends, and I look up and I see Polly, who was on our team, who also I call imaginary Polly because I met her in Delhi Airport and then I didn't see her for about 24 hours. So I wasn't sure that she was real. Yeah. And I look up and Polly's like sat across from me in the restaurant, and both of us were just like,
when I pick you up, I'm worried I will cry, but I didn't. I just stroked you,
and also because it was just, and I was with my husband, and he said to me, he was like, that was an awful lot of emotion for people who have spent maybe like 9 days with each other and then haven't seen each other since. And I was like, honestly, I just love her so much. She's the best.
Lovely.
But my team, I was really lucky. Our team were really great. Yours were good,
We had a lovely team. Yeah, super lovely. And it's and without them, from the Tuesday, when I was massively struggling and thought I was going to get told, you know, you've got to stay. You know, they were going around and telling a few people they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I saw him walk over to our table and I said, here we go, I'm ready. And he came over and he was like, no, you're really hard. I was like, what?
You are hard.
And he was like, solid. Keep going. And I was like, I'm not hard. I'm really not hard. I've cried. And then, you know, when you think, I can't cry anymore, surely.
Oh,
no.
My God.
All the pictures. There's this one photo of our team with all their medals at the end. And everyone looks so happy. And then literally, I've got the my face is screwed up. I was just standing there, but I hadn't taken my boots off at that stage. So I was just thinking, oh my God, what is happening in there? But anyway, do you know there's not a scar?
That's amazing.
I'm actually slightly disappointed because I want something to go, do you know what? Yeah, that's from when I tripped in the layers. There's nothing, nothing.
I remember on the third day, so that was the hardest day. That was when we trekked the equivalent of, like, it was the equivalent of climbing Ben Nevis twice. Mm. And I said to one of the girls, Hattie, who'd also had treatment, she'd had treatment much more recently than I had. And I said to her, I just looked at her and I was like, you're right, babes. And she was like, no, I'm not okay. And I was like, do you want a hug? And she said, no, because if I hug you, I'll cry. I was like, dude, I've been putting off crying all day, so should we just do it? Oh. So there's pictures of me and Hattie just stood at the top of the mountain, like, sobbing. Yeah. It's just so much emotion. And it's just, there's nothing, I've never experienced anything like that. And I don't know if I will ever experience anything like it again. And that's why when people talk about, oh, should I do the trek? I'm just like, yes just do it, 100%.
I mean, and now there's I've had so many messages, people going, I've applied. If I get in, I'm not going to talk to you. I was like, you will, but you probably won't until you're back.
Yeah.
If you get in, you know, it's.
Yeah.
But the Sahara this year, no.
So what was your biggest takeout for you, like as a personal learning?
In that massively what stayed with me is the Monday and the Tuesday, I was evil to myself. In my head, it was relentless. It was constant. I was berating myself. I was so angry at my size, at my fitness, at because I couldn't talk, because I had to concentrate on my breathing. I was so angry at myself. And I just kept telling myself off with every single step. There was no enjoyment. I couldn't, because I was just so cross. And then when John came to speak to me on the Tuesday, and as he's walking towards me, I sort of had given in to it, and I just was ready for him to say, no, you can't go tomorrow, it's too dangerous. And he came over and I said, okay. And he said, you're going. And then I was, and then he said, you're so hard on yourself. He said, but you are hard, you're so hard. And I was like, no. Anyway, and it sank, and I didn't skip up on the Wednesday. But I had no breathing problems. I think there's also the point on the Tuesday where I got into breathing difficulties. I overdosed on my Ventolin. I kept panicking, so I kept taking it. And then I took it too far and my whole body started to shake, and it was super scary. It's either get some donkeys up and we sleep here, or you keep going. I was like, okay, well, you know, we'll keep going then. And I think in that, when you realise, if you're just nice to yourself, the power that can give you. And once I did that and stopped the voice that was saying, so many people wanted to do this and you're going to fail and you can't even get to the top and why are you here, you're, it just was constant. And then to get there and then to do it, but then you have to do it again the next day, and then you think on the Thursday, because the Wednesday was so hard, we were all, I don't know why, we're all like Thursday is going to be so easy. I mean, you're
super
exhausted
cocky.
We were all so cocky about the Thursday, because it wasn't, you know, double Ben Nevis on Thursday, it was just nasty. That we just thought, and also we're all broken and my feet were not great, and you know, you go out and you have to do it again. And I think for me, I just stopped that. It's still there, but I've massively lost the shit bag on my shoulder.
It's how you talk to yourself. To yourself actually really, really matters. Yeah, what you're saying.
Because that's what got me up there. That I wasn't fit enough. There was no way. I was too heavy. I was, you know, struggling with every single step, but somehow.
But you say you weren't fit enough, but you did it, so you must have been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You say you're too heavy, but you did it, so you weren't. I don't even think I fully remember how hard it was.
No.
I feel like now
it's a bit like childbirth.
Yeah, no one tells you, and you forget anyway, because otherwise you'd never do it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have any babies, so I don't know. But.
Yeah. But you do forget quite, well, I forgot quite quickly.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you now.
No, yeah. And you know it hurts.
Yeah,
but it's
worth it.
It's yeah. short lived.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you sort of well, in my head it's like, oh, it's really short lived, and actually then someone says to you, well, actually, this is what happened. Or, you yeah. know, whatever. You're like, oh God, did I really do that?
Yeah.
So maybe there's a bit of that.
So yeah. there is so much power in positive. I know we were talking about positivity
but it's
and self-talk possibility
as but well, and as well, it's about how you talk to yourself. So when you hear yourself saying, "Oh, I can't do that because I'm too heavy,"
yeah,
it's like actually, I want to do that, so I'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
So interesting. It's interesting as well because I'm really bad for negative self-talk, like really bad. I talk to myself in the worst way, and it's one of the biggest problems that I have. But when I was trekking, there was none of that. I was just
you
like,
you were like this positive get bubble your ass for everyone there, though, as like, well.
There is no way you are not doing this.
Mm. You didn't even need to say anything. You were just like a force.
Energy. Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
But that came from other people. I was just reflecting what people were giving me, you know, like.
What was your biggest takeout, do you think, from doing it?
I think my biggest takeaway is that I don't give myself enough credit for things. And I think that kind of belief and that kind of reaffirmation of what my body can do, because I've like watched in awe over the last couple of years as my like I've been cut and burned and poisoned and recovered from that every time, but you kind of think, oh, that was like a trauma, that's what I had to do. For me, just climbing those mountains just reminded me that my body does a lot more than I give it credit for. And also that people, like the people on that trek and the friendships that I've created, I've struggled for a very long time with making friends and keeping friends, and I had a really shit experience last year that I won't go into, but that really made me feel like I often feel like I'm too much or not enough for people. And when I was on the trek, I was like the truest version of who I was. There was no bells, no whistles, there was no facade, and I was plenty, like I was enough for the people I was with. And we did a thing on the last day where everybody got a sheet of paper with their name written at the top, and then everybody wrote nice things on about that,
lovely,
about those people. It's just like it had such a profound impact on me that I was like the truest version of myself, and I have this list of amazing things that people
saw
in me.
That sheet is actually folded up by my bed.
I have it on my desk.
Oh, and I go back to it and I think, my God, am I that nice?
Right.
I didn't know. But what also for me, I think I felt like because of Instagram and the stories and the way that this career has been formed through that app, that I was just that. It felt like a character, forgetting that actually I'm just me holding that phone up. But because I thought I would do that, I thought I would continue to story and do stuff, because there was, we did have cheeky Wi-Fi.
I didn't realise until like after we'd finished the trek that there was Wi-Fi.
Well, because lots of people,
I spent so much money ringing my mum on the last day.
Well, I only found out on I think it was the Tuesday or the Wednesday, but so I'd done a couple of days, and then but it was really good, because even though I could have, I just didn't want to. I wanted to be talking to the people.
Yeah, being present again.
Yeah, it was really being present. But it also made me realise that it's not a facade. It's not an act. I felt tired by Instagram and performing in a way. But then I realised it's not performing.
You're
I just,
yourself.
Just doing it.
You're one of the most authentic people I know on social media. 100%. You are exactly the same.
on the mountainside.
Yeah, you're exactly the same. It doesn't matter. And Giovanna's like that as well. Like super, super authentic. And I think we sometimes lose that.
But I think I lost myself in it, in that I kept thinking, I got to this point where I was thinking, in a way, I'd stopped thinking my way and thinking, I need to do this for Instagram. This is how Instagram wants
you
to
be. To a certain extent, it was a you that, thinking about Instagram specifically, it's a you that's been dying to come out, but in a way you've told yourself you can't be like that because maybe for whatever reason it's too much or whatever. Yeah. And so you could be yourself on Instagram and say, oh, it's because I'm being impo, it's not me.
Yeah.
But it's the fullest, truest form
but
of
the
Vicky.
Funny thing is, when I talk to my close friends And I was talking through this, I feel like I'm performing. And they're like, no, you're not. That is you. Mm. And, you know, they knew it all along. And for some reason, I'd got it into my head that it had become two people.
Put yourself into
and it was really tiring. Mm. And now, since I've been back, I've enjoyed it so much more again. Mm. And been really open to new opportunities, but also felt really powerful to go, actually, that doesn't suit me. I don't want to do that. Thank you very much. And so it's taught so much.
But what I love about you as well, though, Vicky, is that you're...
Let's just
blow smoke up your ass, you know.
Hi, guys. This is my podcast. Thank
you. Come on, tell me I'm brilliant.
But no, this is actually something for everybody, that you're not for everybody. There are going to be people who go, oh, God, here she goes again. Yeah. You know, they're going to be people that watch and then feel the need to comment. Very bizarre, don't have an unfollow button for some reason. All of that, but actually that doesn't stop you continuing to do what you do and be who you are, because there are people who love you and who love it and who'll keep watching and whatever. Yeah. And there'll be people who watch to be nasty, there'll be people who switch off, but that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as you know that you're enjoying it.
I think the understanding as well, in that, you know, you've got this following, and however many people you could have people following you that are other coaches and want to see what you're up to. And sometimes if you think too hard about who is watching, or it can really, really get into your head. But that's the same in a playground of mums. It's the same in an office. Yeah. It's actually life. So, you know.
I really like that quote from Brené Brown, that she I feel like she's the person that every like millennial quotes, but she paraphrases, is it George Washington, I think? It talks about the people who are in the stands don't get to judge. It's the people who are in the arena getting their feet dirty, getting their hands dirty. They're the people who are allowed to judge. And as soon as you start putting yourself into the arena, there's always going to be those people who have those negative thoughts about you, but if they're not doing anything, what does it matter?
And who, like, put on there yesterday, was it you, somebody put on, it must be a Southwood Social Hub thing, but somebody put on, don't take criticism from someone you won't take advice from. Ooh, and actually that's really good, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Why do, because you know, it only takes one nasty somebody to say, I was watching something about the Oscars and this whole worst best dressed situation still happens.
Just
and it takes one comment about that dress that you felt like the most incredible evening of your life, and then you get one comment, you know, or in the Oscars case could be many, and it can destroy that
and
moment.
Thing, but you might have
you.
Had 15 amazing comments right there, but one person went, oh, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, we remember
and that's
that
what you remember. Yeah.
You wouldn't take advice for them. So I loved that because it really hit me. I thought, yes.
And it's about being true to you and what you are putting out there, the message you want to put out there, wherever it is, if you're at work, in the playground, whatever, you know, that if you are really grounded in who you're being and what you want people to see and the difference that you want to make to people, actually it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
you know, you don't need the likes or you don't need the accolades and all that kind of. And it's interesting, so yesterday I was doing a workshop at Oxford Brookes University with some women around personal branding, and that was the key thing. There were sort of women in their early 20s, undergraduates and postgraduates, and they were saying, oh, but I sound too big-headed if I say that. Somebody said, and I was like, but if you don't say, if you don't talk yourself
hard.
Up, if you don't tell your truth, speak your truth, who will? And the thing is, there will be people who will come on board and will be interested, but then there'll be people who are like, oh, that's not for me. But that's okay,
because
you can't be everything for everyone, because then if you are, you're not being true to yourself. So that, I think that's the key thing to remember in everything you're doing.
I think the dogs need to go out for a wee, so we might have to end the podcast so that the dogs can have a wee. Bless them, they've been so good.
So good.
We might have to have a cuddle. All right, love you girls.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. And I never know, this ending of the podcast is, you know, it's a bit awkward because you're not going anywhere. I'm just going to give you a sandwich.
Sandwich?
We're going to have some sandwiches and some tea. Shall I press the button or are you pressing the button? I press it. I'm going to press the button. I mean, look at it. It's a whopper.
It's that is a cracking button.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed the show half as much as you would have if it had been twice as good.
In no particular order, the podcast was produced by loadingzone.co.uk. The podcast makers. There you go, another one done.
Thank you.